We probably tend to think of ourselves as honest people, but there are times when an innocent white lie may not seem like such a big deal.
But new research shows that those little white lies add up, and after a while, it gets easier and easier to be dishonest.
And part of that slippery slope happens because of the way our brains are wired. Regan Gurung is with us now to help sort out all these connections and what they mean. He's the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at UW-Green Bay. He joined us now from the WPR studios in Green Bay. Regan, good to have you back.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, before we get into the research, is it safe to say that most of us want to think of ourselves as honest, moral people?
Absolutely. I think unless you are a sociopath and you don't realize it otherwise, we see ourselves as law-abiding, moral people. And I think morality is one of those big things that many of us believe is what makes us human.
But then you get into the territory of these little white lies, and that's kind of the ambiguous, the gray area where, you know, sometimes it might seem kinder to tell a lie or to do something that's to lie, maybe in a situation where it's easier and it doesn't seem like a big deal. So how do you sort of sort out that kind of dishonesty when you're looking at big picture morality?
And I think here it's a question of the various interactions between the ways human beings think and act and believe and behave. When you think about any act, it's a combination of our thought processes, it's a combination of our feelings, it's a combination of our physiology. And I think some of this new work really nicely shows how all of this goes together. So when you think about the development of morality, for the longest time, psychologists would talk about moral development. You know, Lawrence Kohlberg did these studies where he showed, gave people scenarios and basically asked them, is what happened in the scenario right or wrong? And if so, why? And you could see people at different points of the lifespan have different reasonings for why something was right or wrong. And so once upon a time, we said, okay, so there's this moral development. And if you're not at the right stage of moral development, and this could be chronological, but it's not just age, you have some adults who may not have reached higher levels of moral development. But it's more than that. It's not just this cognitive process. It's also feelings. It's also how our body reacts. And I think that's probably one of the most exciting things as our sense of measuring our brain gets better. We can see the kinds of things that are going on at a neuronal level that we really couldn't see before. And that's giving us some great insight into the interactions between the various factors that influence morality.
Right. That sounds like it's the key. You mentioned the physiology. It's not just that we think it through and weigh the philosophical implications of being dishonest or doing something immoral. We actually, at least at first, when we do something bad or tell that lie, our brains, it sounds like, feel bad. They send us a jolt of bad feeling. Is that right?
And, you know, that in a sense, yes. And I think, and the reason I say in a sense is for so long we think about the brain versus the mind versus the body. And the reality is it's all one. It's all this one cohesive bit of interactive action. So in a way, and it's all happening so quickly, it's really difficult to, you know, point those directions as to what's coming first. And actually in the emotion literature over the years, that was one of the big debates. What happened first? Do you see a bear and, you know, think you're scared and then scared? Or is it you see a bear, your heart is beating and you go, oh, my heart's beating, I must be scared. And that actually is one of the predominant theories of emotion, is we actually get feedback from our physiology. So before even, you know, going to the point of our brain is firing in a certain way, making us think a certain way, it's even at the level of, ooh, you know, my heart's beating. Why am I physiologically aroused? And then we look around for a label. And that's actually one of the most commonly used theories of emotion is this so-called two-factor theory of emotion that says it's this, we have physiological arousal, and then we look for a label for why we are physiologically aroused. And of course, as you can guess, that leads to some fascinating tweaking and studying where you can actually make somebody think they feel something different even though, you know, it's got nothing to do with what they're actually feeling. So we can talk about that if that comes up. But that's exactly it. It's this interaction between your physiology. It's our thinking, the thinking part of the brain, trying to make sense of it, putting a label on it, and then acting. So to go back to something Veronica said, you know, especially the little lies, there are some little things, there are some little immoralities that we may not think twice about because we think about it so quickly, there's not enough time for there to be any physiological reaction to guide us into going, should we do it or not? Other things, when we really feel uncomfortable, when we feel guilty, that's when it can really influence the judgment and decision-making process. So I think the more time we give ourselves to really see how we feel, both physiologically, both emotionally, I think, you know, the things, our decisions about whether to do something or not can be very different.
We're talking with Regan Gurung right now, the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, talking about new research that shows being dishonest gets easier the more we do it. And let's talk about that getting easier part of it, Regan. So let's say I'm about to tell a lie. I tell someone I like their sweater or their haircut, but really I think it's... Sorry, Rob. It's cat's out of the bag. What really I think is kind of hideous, but I decide to do this, and maybe my heart pounds a little bit. Maybe I get a little flushed in the face. But then the next time I run into that same situation and I have to tell that little bit of a lie, it seems like my body doesn't respond quite as strongly, that it's not as big a deal. So it starts to seem like, you know, it's just a slippery slope here.
Exactly.
At some point, maybe it gets kind of easy to tell that lie.
And I think so. Here, there are two different processes taking place. So you already mentioned, and let me tell you, I've had my fair share of sweater comments. but there's this physiological arousal, and then the next time, if it's exactly the same situation, our body almost habituates to it. And I mean, we're all familiar with habituation, even if we don't use that jargony kind of term. But you know, when you step into your own kitchen and you hear, once upon a time, you probably heard the sound of the fridge. Or you step here on campus, there are some classrooms where you step in and you can hear the lights buzzing. And you think, oh, how am I going to concentrate? Those lights are buzzing. But you know what? Our brain tunes it out, right? So the next time you step into the classroom or that kitchen, you no longer hear that fridge. You no longer hear the buzzing of the lights. It's the same thing with a startle response. You know, we can really scare somebody by jumping out at them and scaring them or with showing them this scary picture. But if we show them exactly the same picture again and again and again, well, they're not going to be scared anymore. Their brain has habituated to it. That's the same idea that was tested in a recent study where they found that as participants lied, the more they lied, that physiological arousal actually decreased over time. So not only, and you know, I've talked about the beating of the heart before, so not only did the heart rate no longer go up, but in this particular study, they said, let's go beyond heart rate. Let's actually look at the firing of the brain. And they focused on a part of the brain that's been tied to emotions, the amygdala. And I say tied, but I should also want to say that it is now way too simplistic to think that all emotion is just this one part of the brain. Our brains, emotion is all over there. But there is definitely one part that tends to be active more often with certain emotions like fear. And they popped people into an fMRI machine, a functional magnetic resonance imagery machine, and actually looked at their brain functioning while they did a certain task. And the task was sort of interesting too, right? So here's what happens. There's this person in the fMRI machine. There's somebody outside. Now, the person in the machine thinks that both they and the person outside are both part of the study. But aha, that's not the case. The person outside is actually a confederate, is actually an actor, somebody who's been paid by the experimenter to pretend that they're in the study. Now, the person in the fMRI machine has to make judgments about how many coins are in a certain jar and send this judgment by a keyboard to the person on the outside. Now, the way the study is set up is if this person lies about the number of coins in that jar, they benefit, right? So the incentives are pretty clear. They benefit. And what they found over many different trials, or doing this many different times, is that, sure, the first time when that person lies a little bit, and the first time they actually don't lie too much, they lie a little bit and there's some brain activity, but in succeeding trials, as they do it more and more and more, not only do they start lying more, but that brain activity actually isn't happening at the same level as it did earlier on. So literally what you see, and they showed this, is over successive trials, the amount of activation of the amygdala actually dropped off. It was almost like the brain was habituating to it. So that brain physiology wasn't happening at the same level, and correspondingly, the amount of lying went up.
We're talking with Regan Gurung right now, professor of human development and psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, talking about new research that shows that being dishonest gets a lot easier the more we do it.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think of yourself as an honest, moral person? Do you feel uncomfortable in a situation where you might tell that polite lie? Is it a slippery slope, in fact? And do you have questions about how our brains and our bodies work when it comes to dealing with emotions and dealing with moral issues? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation now with social psychologist Regan Gurung, talking about why it gets easier to be dishonest the more we do it.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you see this in your life? Have you had an experience in your daily life, maybe in your career, where there was some benefit to a little dishonesty, maybe a moral shortcut, and then it got easier and easier to do? Or do you have a question for Regan about how this all works? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first caller now. We have Tim joining us in Eau Claire. Tim, hi.
A couple quick questions for you. Mm-hmm. One, I'm wondering how this would deal with poker players who effectively... that is kind of their job, to hide whether they're lying or not. Second, you guys use the term morality. I've always learned that morality is an individual precept. So for one person, it might be more okay to lie or something to that effect. And then one last quick follow-up question that just popped into my head. Can you train someone the other way? So take a child who has been conditioned to lie and recondition them not to lie.
Yeah, I was wondering about that last one, too. Thanks, Tim. Lots of interesting questions. Let's start with the poker players, Regan. So what does this tell us about poker players? Nothing good? Or is there something here we're missing, a nuance?
Well, I think the bottom line here, and actually Tim has three great points that sort of all go together in some ways. But the first one is for poker players or anybody who is in these situations and needs to for a living, and that's a whole separate story as who needs to, but it's practice. It's practice. Because of the study we talked about that clearly shows that it is habituation, as long as you practice it, namely do it over and over, you get better at it. So you can tell a novice poker player from somebody who's been doing it for a really long time because they've got practice doing it. And I think human beings are very good at adjusting their physiology once they pay attention to it. So just like you can fool a lie detector, you can actually practice and get much, much better. And I think, quite honestly, the sad reality is for a lot of people who seem to make a living out of being dishonest or are dishonest pretty often, they've done it so often that they can now do it without feeling any of that. Let's hit the other one. The morality as an individual level, this actually ties to a bigger point, which is morality really varies with culture pretty significantly. So there are culture broadly defined, whether it's geographic, whether it's race, ethnicity. There are different prescriptions for what is right and wrong in different cultures. And then you can also bring that to the individual level where based on their learning, based on their households, based on how their family treated them, what their parents did, their sense of right or wrong may be very different. So you can have, you know, 10 people in a room and because of different experiences growing up, their sense of right or wrong will be different. So Tim's right on there where to some extent morality does have a lot of individual variance. But when we pull the camera back, as it were, you can see some clear-cut cultural similarities as well. So, you know, that's always factors in. I think Tim also used a really important word here. That's the conditioning. I think we get both conditioned to be moral, and we can likewise use conditioning, as it were, to be to change immoral behaviors. And here, by conditioning, I'm referring to the more classical, you know, psychological science of, you know, reward and punishment. You can punish people for being immoral and it'll quickly extinguish that behavior. And by the same token, you can use incentives and reward good behavior, which in the big scheme of things, reward is always the better way to go.
Thanks for the call, Tim. We'll go next to Jay in Appleton. Jay, hi.
Hi. Interesting topic. I appreciate it.
What do you want to bring up, Jay?
Well, on the line of children again, can you condition your children inadvertently to easily lie? So if they do, you know, small things when they're little that you don't make a big deal out of, right, they become accustomed to desensitizing, in essence, the guilt that they should feel.
Interesting, Jay. Thanks a lot for the call. Regan, can we maybe even accidentally be training our kids to be better and better and more remorseless liars?
Absolutely. And I think the bad news is when we think about conditioning, we often think about, oh, are you rewarded or punished for doing something? And actually, one of the most famous studies in psychology involves a Bobo doll where children watched adults hitting a Bobo doll. And when they saw adults hitting a Bobo doll, when they were left alone with this Bobo doll, they too hit the Bobo doll. So children learn by watching. And if they see people, adults around them lying or being dishonest and not getting punished for it, they will learn to be to lie and be dishonest as well. And it's not just the parents or the adults around them. It's also media. If you see individuals tweeting lies or lying in the media and not being called out for it, well, kids are going to learn that that's something you can get away with. So I think it's up to all of us, not just parents of children, but all of us to go, if there are people lying or doing dishonest things, you got to call them out for it. Otherwise, young, impressionable minds can learn that you can just get away by doing that. So, hey, let's do it as well. So absolutely, as far as children go, we have to watch for events of dishonesty and do something about it, and quickly. I think that was another point in there, too. You can't wait. A big part about conditioning is the time between a behavior and whether reward or punishment is delivered has to be very short. And the shorter that delay, the more likely the child or the individual is going to learn what the right behavior is.
Regan Gurung is with us right now, psychology professor from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, talking about new research that shows the more that we lie, the easier it gets to do it. And we'll take another phone call now. We've got Randy with us in Madison. Randy, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. I hope I have the right name here, but I recall reading the philosopher Cecilia Bach, who specialized in writing about lying. And I remember that she used to cite studies that said, we all lie all the time. I mean, literally every few minutes. And if that's the case, how come we're not all expert liars?
Randy, thank you for that question. And I guess there's more of those shades of gray there, Regan. I mean, is there something to that idea that we do lie, or is there sort of more of a line in the sand than that?
Well, I think the, you know, the shades of gray is a good point, and it's the bigger point is, you know, when is actually something a lie? You know, when we talk about, you know, earlier on, you mentioned the white lies versus the other lies. Well, it's a matter of perspective. You know, you may think something is small, you may think something is a white lie, but that's not exactly how it may be perceived to somebody else, especially the person that you may be lying to. And I think that's a really big issue in dishonesty and lying, is this notion of empathy and sympathy. We now know that it's not just moral development, but it's also there are also moral emotions, and two of the most important are empathy and sympathy. And when you empathize, when you put yourself into the place of somebody else, when you try and feel what they're feeling, or when you feel for that person, the moment those two emotions are activated, dishonesty actually goes down. So I think very often this notion about shades and, you know, white lies, it's the moment you start empathizing, what you may have thought is not a big deal may actually be quite a big deal.
So is that a lesson we can take away here, Regan, from this research? How should we be thinking about our own personal morality and honesty based on this research that shows it gets easier to lie the more we do it?
Yeah, I think for me the big take-home message, and this was a really interesting article, because not only did it have a you know, put a good number of people into this fMRI machine. I mean, I've seen studies that are, you know, used to be 5 and 10, but this had 55 people in there. It's a pretty decent sample for an fMRI machine. But it really shows you that our physiological response is important. So the take-home message is, whenever you're in a situation, you know, be open to your physiology. Be open to how you feel, both physiologically and feeling-wise. And that last point that I mentioned is really key, especially if it is something to do with somebody else. Put yourself in their shoes and ask yourself, how would they feel if you did this or said this? And I think that would make your whole perspective on morality and lying very different than if you just had a self-centered focus.
We'll leave it there for now. Regan, always good to talk to you.
Thanks. Thank you, Rob.
We've been talking to Regan Gurung. He's the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He joined us from our WPR studios there in Green Bay. We've been talking about new research that shows that it gets physically easier over time to lie the more we do it. You can read, by the way, Regan wrote a blog post about this topic. We've got a link to that over on the Central Time Facebook page. You can find out more about that original research, and you can share his blog post while you're there. Again, that's Regan Gurung, and we've got a link to that over at the Central Time Facebook page.